Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 152, being recorded on the 9th of November, 2016, with special guest Bob Ward. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Evan and our special guest, Bob. Unfortunately, Kale was traveling today, so he won't be able to join us, or he may jump in later, we don't know. But we've got all the, you know, we've got Bob here to talk about some cool stuff relating to SQL 2016 on Azure, and so we're anxious to get to him. But before we do that, let's just do a quick roundup on the Azure news. And Evan, thanks for putting some of those in the show notes. I think there's one that you'd like to start with.
Yeah, and I swear this was not planned. This actually was the in-memory OLTP for Azure SQL Database, you know, went GA just a couple of days ago. So this was total coincidence with the fact that we have Bob here to talk about SQL Server. And it's
I think it's a great way to announce it. I love that feature's getting announced.
I'm sure we may end up talking about it, but this is yet another feature. You know, we've talked about this before on the show where SQL Azure. I'm showing my age with SQL with Azure SQL Database, but Azure SQL Database was originally SQL Server Lite, right? We had to kind of block a whole bunch of features and functionality. The SQL Server team has done a great job the last, you know, 3 or 4 years at really kind of bringing the two much, much closer in terms of feature parity. And this is a good example of a feature that shipped for SQL Server 2016, and now it's lighting up in Azure. So again, you're seeing, you know, really, really good feature parity, a lot of really neat features show up in both. Some show up on premises first, and then others show up first in Azure. It just kind of depends on, you know, where they can light it up. But this is, you know, really allows you to basically leverage the, you know, everything's going on in memory. Right, and so you're going to see huge 30x or higher performance gains relative to, you know, traditional aspects of this. So yeah, so
yeah,
SQL Server speed
benefits.
Sure,
this is a huge deal for SQL Server customers and for Azure SQL customers, right? Because as you just said, we're moving such more closer with a feature parity between what we have for SQL Server 2016 and what's in Azure SQL Database. And in-memory OLTP is just kind of the crown jewel, one of these crown jewel features that we have that kind of line up now with Azure. And if you think about it, we also support column store indexes in Azure SQL Database. So we have customers now that actually can go through considering to use Azure SQL Database both for in-memory OLTP transactions, like you said, 30x performance, but also if they still want this hybrid transaction analytical performance capabilities, these real-time analytics, they can actually add column store even on top of that.
Yeah,
both on-premise now in Azure as well.
Yeah, and I think this is, I mean, this is the really the cool aspect of what, you know, the SQL Server engineering team's done the last few years, right, is figure out how to design a PaaS service that produces the, you know, the same features and capabilities that on-premises SQL Server does. So we'll definitely hit that some more as we, you know, kind of get deeper into this.
And one of the interesting use cases listed for this was for IoT data ingestion. You know, we talked about the IoT Hub just a couple of episodes ago, how you're getting that stream of data coming in and you need to be able to process it using an event hub or something like that. And here's another way to process it using in-memory OLTP database.
Yep.
So a very cool feature. A new one, something new that I'd like to add to the discussion is the Azure Container Registry Preview. So, you know, we have the Azure Container Service and typically you want to have a repository of containers, right, that you deploy to your container service. And typically the repository has been a public repository, but you know, obviously companies want to have their own kind of curated set of images that they want to make available, say, to their own employees or administrative staff, and now you could do that. You could create this private container registry service, you know, put your own images in there, and then your you know, as part of your Azure account, you could deploy your own images to the Azure Container Service and scale it up or down as much as you can. So that's something that's been kind of lacking, I should say, you know, if you compare it, say, to the Amazon service, container service, and it's a good thing to have that, bring it up to parity now.
Yeah. We also got some new cognitive services, and both there's an Azure Media Service and then a cognitive service that are really kind of along the same line. So the Azure Media Redactor goes in, and this is the technology to kind of blur faces in videos, right? And you see this a lot, and people are just mapping. You see this a lot, right? Where they're taking street level video of these maps or street level images, and they got to blur out individuals. They don't really want to show them there. And then the cognitive services content moderator, and this has got to be interesting to do at a worldwide scale. We might have to go track down a PM for this to see how they're doing this, because what this does is it actually filters out offensive content in the data that you're running through cognitive services, both for text, image, and video. It's got to be interesting to try and do in a worldwide where not everybody considers the same things offensive, as you go across the world. Some things that are perfectly normal in the U.S. are offensive in the U.K. and vice versa.
Yeah. And so, there's a language aspect to it as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then one final update, of course, with DocumentDB, they continue to improve that service. One of the kind of problems, if any of our listeners have used DocumentDB, if you go through the tutorial that used to be out there, it does take a while to get a simple sample working, just to get something up and running, because you use that JSON schema format and syntax and whatnot. It just takes a little while to get used to all that. And so now they've made a more simpler quick start option, so you can just quickly get an application running that uses DocumentDB, and so they've kind of simplified that initial ramp into DocumentDB. DocumentDB is stored in a very highly available subsystem within all the data stored in a very highly available subsystem within Azure. But some customers like to have that guarantee that that the data is always going to be available. So there's a backup and restore facility now that's available using APIs that you could use to just, if you need to take a periodic backup of your DocumentDB, maybe to take a checkpoint or something like that.
Yeah, that's probably more for, because we dealt with this in Azure SQL DB early on, which is, the data may be highly available. That doesn't mean that somebody doesn't mess up the data.
Correct. Someone might accidentally delete something, things like that.
Yep.
They've also added firewall support. I suppose, if you have DocumentDB, it's kind of based a lot on REST APIs. But at the same time, you don't want to open up your DocumentDB database to everybody. You would say you want to limit it to a specific set of VMs and things like that. So now you could put all those you can put all those filters to allow only specific IP addresses to connect into your DocumentDB instance.
Yep.
So there's also some additional geospatial support, for mapping constructs and things like that. So glad to see them really improving that, and we'll put all these in the show notes on the website after this, after we finish recording this show. So without further ado, let's turn over to our special guest, Bob Ford. Bob, would you mind just giving our listeners a little bit of a high level about what you do at Microsoft and how you got to where you are today with SQL, in the SQL world?
Yeah, thanks, Ajit. Appreciate that. So actually, last week marks my 23rd anniversary at Microsoft. So 23 years, I know.
Bob, congratulations. Bob predates SQL Server is the joke in the SQL Server org when
so
I was there.
My background is with SQL Server the whole way since I joined Microsoft. And I actually have been in the support organization up until this past year for 22 years. I actually started supporting SQL Server 1.1 for OS 2. So,
nice.
Yes, and the original SQL Server 4.20 for NT. And so I've seen the evolution of SQL Server from its inception at Microsoft all the way now to, our offerings both in the cloud and on-premise. So I've seen a lot over the years. And, again, spent a lot of time in support, so most of my career has been around people just complaining to me about problems.
You sound surprisingly calm considering that.
That's my background with Evan. We've known each other for a long time, the support organization. So this spring, I got the opportunity to join the product team for the SQL Server product team. I work for a very special team called Tiger, and within the what we call the larger data group. And we kind of have a charter. It's all about customer success. So I spend, you know, part of my time talking directly to customers about roadblocks and barriers and things to making SQL successful. I spend also a part of my time just evangelizing the product, talking about various aspects of it to people. I try to make it more technical. I'm not very good at marketing, so I'm really pretty good about talking about the technical aspects of our products. So I've been doing a lot of that. And then just also just trying to work on features and things we do in the product to improve it. So kind of excited to be now part of a product team. It's a great opportunity for me, and doing a show like this is certainly part of what I do now.
Awesome. I really appreciate you coming on. So, you know, I guess we were all excited to hear about the most recent incarnation of SQL Server, you know, the 2016 version. What's been the kind of feedback that you've received on that so far?
The feedback has been actually extremely positive. And the reason is it's really about the technology, right? I've recently been on a road show doing a presentation called SQL Server 2016, It Just Runs Faster. that's our kind of branding. Mm-hmm. And it's all about explaining to customers some of the amazing features of SQL 2016 that help enhance the performance of your application with, like, no changes. Like Evan talked about 30x performance with in-memory OLTP, you know, we believe there's core features within SQL Server that you can get 30% gains with your app with no changes. Now, that's not going to be across the board for every app, but a lot of apps, we've seen that from customers. So that's a good example of just some excitement about the new release. And that's not even talking about some of this amazing new features that come in, like Always Encrypted or Query Store, or just separate specific features we've added into the product itself to make it a great thing. And then, you know, Evan and I were chatting a little bit earlier about Azure. You know, because you think about SQL Server 2016 itself, it's an on-premise product. How is that related to Azure itself?
Mm.
And we've done some actually, and even though we've had some hybrid type features in their product before, we've made some enhancements. We have some new features along that line as well.
Yeah, and I think that was actually kind of when I had reached out to you originally, Bob. That was the thing that kind of struck me as I looked at SQL Server 2016 versus, you know, we were working on 2014 back when I was, you know, kind of still leaving the org. That was things we were talking about. 2016 really looks to me like we kind of built knowing that Azure is there, right? We built features and capabilities, some of the StretchDB stuff that really couldn't exist without Azure to go along with it.
Right. And, you know, we've had this term at Microsoft about cloud on your terms, and we still think SQL Server 2016 as an on-premise product is amazing for so many customers. But we've also recognized that customers do value what the Azure cloud brings to them, whether it be that you want to put your entire application using Azure SQL Database as a platform, or whether you say, you know, I need to consider these hybrid features. I've got some assets and investments and on-premise that I don't want to change, but I want to take advantage of the cloud in some way or another. And it's interesting, Evan, as I was thinking about this podcast we were going to do, I actually did a tweet today on my Twitter feed, at BobWarnMS, where people can go out there and see a white paper that we've built that talks about what we call hyperscale features for SQL Server 2016. And it's building on some of the hybrid functionality we've done before, but really stepping up the game. And you mentioned Stretch Database. That's probably the crown jewel of the hybrid features we've added for SQL Server 2016. And the concept, you guys want to kind of talk about the concept? I think it's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Actually.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, think about your customer, and let's say you're using SQL Server 2016 from a transaction point of view. You know, you're feeding a lot of transactions into the system. You've maybe got a small number of large tables feeding in here. And for regulatory reasons, you got to keep a lot of old data around. But for the most part, you know, you have data what you call hot, you know, data you're using all the time. And maybe, I don't know, let's just say on a yearly basis. So 1 year's worth of data is fairly hot for you. You use it a lot, you add to it, you maintain it, you update it, you report on it. But for regulatory reasons, you got to keep around like 5 years worth of data. To make sure that you can access it. And you don't access it very often. Maybe you get it once a year or maybe once a quarter or something. So we kind of recognize this capability or this particular situation where customers are in. And when we talk to customers, they're like, look, I've got all this data, but I only access what I call cold data very infrequently, but it's killing me on index maintenance. It's killing me on backups. It's killing me on storage. I'm keeping around a lot of data that's kind of an albatross to me, and I don't need it very often. So is there something that we could build into the product that would help them? And we call it Stretch Database. That's the feature we've built. And so the concept's pretty simple. You go into a table and you tell us what is the criteria based on rows, like kind of think of like a where clause, right? Let's think of just date time we just talked about. I want current year's data to be hot in my current database, but anything older than that, I'm okay with it being somewhere else in a remote place. And for us, that's Azure. We've built a service that's similar to Azure SQL Database, but it's specifically for this feature, where you configure your tables on premise to say, here's data I want to keep what I call hot on my local SQL server. Here's the data that I don't mind being remote in Azure. And once you configure this, kind of in the background, we will trickle data on your existing tables to the cloud. Imagine what I talked about, this 5-year system. Let's say this table ended up being like a terabyte, you know, and so only, I don't know, 200 meg of it is really active and the 800 meg is cold. We'll start trickling this 800 meg to Azure. And then when you're ready to go access that cold data, you do it transparently. You just select from your table. We'll recognize that the data that you need is cold, and we'll go retrieve it from Azure and present the results to you. Think of like a link server concept behind the scenes that we're actually making happen. And so the capabilities are amazing. You're taking advantage of the cloud to put data out there that you access infrequently using storage and using facilities and services based on a subscription from Azure. And then now all of a sudden on premise, your index maintenance, your backups, the things you do with this data that are hot, you do all the time, are much faster. And you save storage, you know, on your local system. So pretty cool feature. We've got wizards. We've got different types of tools that we've built with the system to identify what tables could qualify for this, help you get your subscription set up, and help you kind of start making the migration process. And so I would say, you know, if anything, when we've identified this concept called hyperscale, stretch database, what we call SQL stretch database, is the number one feature SQL Server 2016 presents in this space.
Now, this feature sort of sounds like the old, and it's probably still there, I haven't seen it recently, but the partitioning that you used to do, but when you used to do partition queries, it was really a pain to manage that.
Yeah.
I mean, this
yeah.
sounds like it's much, much more transparent. I just write my query, you know, I define my kind of cut point, right? And then I write my query, and my application doesn't know or care which data is cold, which data is hot.
Absolutely, Evan. You're right. Partitioning requires a lot of management. And of course, even with partitioning, you can't specify, I would like one of my partitions to be in the cloud.
Right.
So with here, there's some small changes to the syntax for SQL Server. You need to configure your table through like an alter table statement to mm-hmm. tell us, I'd like remote data to be part of this. And then the other key piece is you build what's called a T-SQL function, and you specify in there a select statement that identifies which data that you want to remain hot on premise and which data you want to remain cold. And once you build that function and you tell SQL Server through alter table, this is my function to identify, we automatically make this happen behind the scenes transparently.
But interesting. So a question then about when you do the query, so the query is transparently expanded to the cold data set, right?
Right.
If the time frame has increased to include that. So is that process, I assume you're not just using it as a remote file storage, right? You're actually doing like index queries remotely and then collecting, aggregating the data. Is that what you're doing?
So it's a little bit like that. Think in terms of us automatically building a database, like an Azure SQL database. Think of us building one of those in the cloud for you automatically and storing that data in tables in Azure, right? And then when you run a query locally, and think of like a link server definition going from your local SQL server to this remote data, we behind the scenes recognize that part of your query requires that data. Maybe all of it requires, I'm not sure. And then we will go retrieve that data and bring it down on premise for you and pull it. And remember, you're only accessing this infrequently. You're not doing this all the time. And in fact, that's part of our advisor and tool system. We go and try to help identify data that is not frequently accessed. Because if you had a lot of data that's frequently accessed, it wouldn't be cost effective to you to go to the cloud all the time, you know, to get your data. So again, think in terms of this concept of cold and hot, right, or even warm.
Right.
So your warm or hot data remains on your SQL Server on-premise, and your cold data goes to the cloud, and then infrequently when you need that cold data, when you run a query, transparently we'll just bring the results to you.
So there's got to be an IO, or I guess it's not really. I mean, I guess it's IO/network, right? There's a query hit, but again, I think to your point, like you only do this infrequently, so you know. You kind of know when you run this query that you're running, I'm getting old data, I expect it to run slower, So you're kind of designing around that, or your app knows that that's going to happen. Right?
Correct.
Increase your query timeouts and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Evan, no question. When we have to go to remote data, we're going across the internet, right, to your Azure database that's backing up the Stretch database. And again, it's a separate service, but it's similar technology with Azure SQL Database actually powering this. So yeah, when you run a query that's going to have to go get this cold remote data, it's going to take a little longer than running on premise. But then again, you also have other options. You know, maybe you've got Express Route set up to Azure to make this a little bit quicker, you know, to get this data, something of that nature. But definitely you can expect retrieving that's not going to be near as fast as getting your local data. But again, that's the whole point. This is something you would go get on an infrequent basis.
Well, because those, you know, those SANs are expensive.
Right. That's right.
On premises.
That's the whole idea. The whole idea is that, you know, if you don't want to go build some separate storage facility in your on-premise environment to hold this cold data, you know, put it in the cloud. And, you know, take the hit on maybe a little slower response time to go get the data, you know, versus having to pay for extra storage on your on-premise environment. And again, I think the bigger key here is the savings for you on the maintenance of your existing tables. And because, again, customers would say, oh, I've got this 1 or 2 terabyte table holding all this data. I've got to rebuild indexes on this whole thing, yet I'm only using 20% of my data. Yeah. Why do I want to do that, right? So all your index maintenance and backups and things like that get a lot faster on-premise.
Well, I remember when we were doing SQL Server, you know, performance support, we would occasionally run into customers like, yeah, my restore takes, you know, 12 hours.
Exactly.
You know, or 15 hours. And that's just because of the size of the database, and very rarely does anybody actually use that, you know, 4 terabytes worth of data.
That's right.
Of data.
Think of it being like, let's SQL Server do backup, restore, in all the different maintenance operations on data that really matters. And then infrequently going access data in the cloud. And by the way, remember, it's all in the cloud, so we're backing up that data automatically. That's all being supported, backed up, and we support even encryption on it and everything else. So
is there any, what's the kind of difference between SQL Server 2016 on-premises versus our SQL service in Azure? Like, I know, I think they kind of use the same engine, underlying engine, correct?
Yes, that's a great question. So Evan mentioned earlier about MRLTP being something that wasn't exactly cloud first because that feature showed up in the on-premise first. But it is true that the engine that powers the servers that generate and power the PaaS offering of SQL Azure Database, it's the same engine that powers SQL Server 2016. It's the same thing, right? Now, we've built specific functionality into the Azure SQL Database infrastructure to ensure that it can power a PaaS environment. You know, for example, like database transaction unit is not a concept you'll see on-premise. You know, it's a concept you'll actually find when running in the Azure environment. And so we have to build technology that supports that. But this core functionality, this feature parity Evan's talking about, it's the same code. And if you look at SQL Server 2016, many features were actually cloud-first born. Let's take a look at a feature like Query Store. Query Store is a new popular feature we have in SQL 2016 to help you monitor the performance of your queries in SQL Server. Well, we actually had that running in Azure a couple of years ago with certain specific customers, and we tested it, refined it, and made it really powerful. And then it showed up actually on the premise when we released SQL 16. So the cloud-first mantra is not cloud-only, right? The concept is, you know, let's try to introduce some features in our cloud offering like Azure SQL Database. Let customers use it. Let customers test it. Let's create new functionality on it. And then at some point later, we'll release this into to an on-premise schedule, which is obviously not happening as quick as we're iterating in the cloud.
All right.
Yeah, I still, so this is ancient history. So I think at this point, it's probably not a big deal, but I still remember the first time, you know, when I was doing something with SQL Azure and, you know, walked over to one of my engine colleagues and said, yeah, I'm on this build of SQL and this thing's not working right. They said, that build doesn't exist.
It is true. The earlier days of Azure, there was a little bit of split in how we were doing the engine and how we were actually maintaining that versus on-premise, but that's totally all been coalesced. And again, we keep those things up to date. Now, we iterate functionality in the cloud much faster. We have that capability, right, than we do on-premise. But the core engine that powers SQL 16 and Azure Database is the same core engine.
Now, Bob, I'm sure, you know, you say you meet customers a lot. You probably get this question a lot, but I'll ask you.
Sure.
You know, DocumentDB using something like, you know, a NoSQL database versus, say, SQL Server. I hear people ask me this a lot. You know, why do I have to use SQL Server when I have something like a MongoDB or a DocDB? You know, they provide that same, you know, raw SQL functionality. You can have these tables and you know, link them up and indexing and all that stuff automatically. How do you approach a conversation with a customer when they ask you something like this?
I've had that question a few times, not a lot. Most of the customers that I talk to are specifically more in the relational database world. Mm-hmm. But I have had a few customers talk to me and say, you know, what is DocumentDB and why would I even think about using that, right? And I like to think of it this way. If you're a developer that really is used to working in a JSON environment with Java and a lot of JSON files and JSON objects, and that's just what you're used to using, right? And you're naturally used to doing that, you know, DocumentDB could be a powerful service for you, right? Because it's very streamlined and very integrated with that whole mentality. If you think about it, it is a database management system like SQL Server is, like Azure SQL Database is, but it's very oriented towards the Java programmer and JSON type-based technology. So if that is kind of natural to you and you're already used to developing that kind of environment, it is possible that DocumentDB actually may be a better option for you. You know, a lot of our developers and customers, though, are still used to using the relational database type style technology, and their apps are all built towards that. Having said that, we actually do support now in SQL 16 JSON. So you have the ability to use T-SQL functionality to shred data in a JSON format and store data and shred it back and so forth. So we do support that. But naturally and natively, when I've talked to customers that if you're used to JSON, and by the way, when I talk to customers and I say JSON, they say, what is that? Mm-hmm. I say, DocumentDB may not be for you. Mm-hmm. That's usually what I usually say to them. But it could be that they're working with a development environment that is used to use that style of development and data.
Excellent.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was, but we had somebody from the DocumentDB space, and that's coming out of the same larger data engineering team, right, Bob?
Absolutely. You know, when I said I work for the data group, actually owns a lot of these properties and services you're talking about. Our group owns DocumentDB. We own SQL Server. We own Azure SQL Database. We own machine learning. We own cognitive services that you mentioned. We own Hadoop. We own our HD Insight technology. So our data group is pretty large, and we own a lot of our data properties at Microsoft. And again, DocumentDB is just one of our offerings that makes sense for a lot of customers. And for a lot of customers, Azure SQL Database or even SQL 16 on-premise, you know, just makes a lot of sense for them.
Awesome. So, without giving away too many secrets, what's next for SQL? Like, is there anything that users have been asking for that we are working on that you can talk about? Or
yeah, I can say a few things. I think Azure SQL Database is still, you know, something that we are committed to iterating. And Evan pointing out our availability for MRM OLTP is a big offering for us, is a big step for us to continue to get that feature parity. I was just looking here a little bit. I know some of our updates there. Temporal tables is a functionality in SQL Server 2016 to track history. And we've offered that now, general availability on Azure SQL Database. So you're going to continue to see us iterate and improve on that service. But we're so committed to SQL Server as an on-premise product that a lot of customers know and love, and we'll continue to do that. You may have seen the announcement this year in March about SQL Server running on Linux.
Yeah.
So you're going to continue to hear more about that from us. We consider that to be a major strategy for us, and you're going to continue to hear more details in the future about a direction we're headed there. So we're very committed to that platform. And we'll continue to iterate on this product, SQL Server 2016, with a new version at some point, and leverage all the great things we've done with MRM OLTP, with column store, with always on availability groups, with the performance enhancements that and the hybrid features. We'll always continue to iterate on hybrid features. You'll see Stretch Database, for example, probably get new functionality. So all of those assets we think make sense because customers have this choice. Right. You can run SQL Server on-premise if you still love that environment. That's what you want to do. You can mix and match. You can add a hybrid feature. For example, you can do always on availability groups on-premise for SQL Server. But maybe you want to take one of your secondary replicas as a read-only reporting database and put it in the cloud. Put it in an Azure virtual machine. Maybe you only do that during the holiday season. It's like a peak load demand scenario. I want to add a replica during the holiday season so that I can offload some of my work from on-premise that's getting hit pretty hard and put it in the cloud, and we offer that capability. In fact, we have a wizard in SQL 16 called a replica wizard, where you just go in and talk about your Azure subscription, and we build a virtual machine, and we create a replica on the fly for you. Wow. As an async replica for reporting purposes, right?
That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff we'll continue to iterate on. Every time we do a SQL release, we're always going to think in terms of how do we make sure that we make it the fastest database in the market? And here I'll just put my sales hat on for a second. For the second year in a row, we now lead in Gartner's for the operational database, relational database system market. We are now number one, beating Oracle 2 years in a row for SQL Server, which is amazing, right?
Congratulations.
Yeah, we've been chasing that for a long time.
I mean, that's great, right? And we announced that 2 years in a row now. We still think we have the best database on the market. But every time we're doing this, we're always still thinking about cloud first, and not about cloud only, but cloud first and about hybrid. You know, cloud on your terms. So you'll continue to see us iterate always on hybrid functionality anytime we release a version of SQL Server.
I just had this flash of in my head of an on-premises SQL Server, we'll call it 2018, right, running with a StretchDB to, you know, the service that has one of its replicas running on a Linux. Yeah, running in Azure. I just had that.
Who would have thought, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. Never, right? I mean, Linux, no way. Yeah.
This is kind of more of a support question here, and both of you guys, you know, are in support or used to be in support. So if someone, a customer does have a scenario like where they have an on-premises SQL, which is a bit of StretchDB, and they're having an issue with that whole thing, who do they call? Do they call like the Azure support or the
here's a cool thing. You know, it's not like we have just like people in silos at Microsoft, right? So people that do SQL Server support, we've started to certainly make sure people that understand how to support that product get our hybrid offerings. So they're trained and they understand how StretchDB works. And we have people doing Azure SQL Database and other Azure engineers, like Evan works in Azure support. They get how to do Azure. But either way, you can go either way, and we'll support you fully in those environments.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna kind of echo what Bob says. I mean, and this is one of the beauties of a lot of commonality between these services, right? Azure is just Windows, right? Kind of at a low level. Robbie, obviously, lots of things layered on top of it. But there's, you know, and the VMs, it's just Windows and it's just Linux and it's just SharePoint or it's just SQL or it's, you know, just Mongo. The nice thing about that is that knowledge is transferable, right? So the folks that know how to tune queries in SQL Server on premises also know how to tune queries in Azure SQL DB. Right. So there, you know, there's some quirks here or there, and connectivity is a little bit differently, and there's definitely some specialized knowledge. But, you know, when you look at broad strokes, networking is just networking. You know, SQL is just SQL. And so, yeah, there is a ton of commonality. And so, yeah, we do absolutely use the same people across the board.
And, you know, I wanted to add one little blurb about a SQL 16 Azure feature that's going to probably be hidden. It's a kind of a golden nugget, I think. We offered a couple of releases ago the ability to do SQL Server backups to Azure. So think in terms of you doing backups now. You're like, I got to keep all these backups, right? And so if you want to use Azure storage, like a blob storage, as a way to say, hey, I'd like to put my backups now in the cloud instead of relying on just being on-premise, we've offered this, actually. We have this functionality. In fact, we have something called Manage Backup, and you do it automatically. But one little hidden thing that people didn't know is in 16, we changed the functionality so we can use something called block blobs now. And we've upped the size limitation of these backups from 1 terabyte to 12 terabytes. So if you want to actually, you know, back up a fairly large size database to the cloud in Azure storage, you can now get to like 12 terabytes of backup storage. And that's just kind of a hidden thing. You'll see it in the paper that's on my tweet. But that's going to go unnoticed. And if people are thinking, oh, I'm really doing a lot of pretty sized large databases on-premise, and I'm trying to back up to Azure, but even 1 terabyte is too small for me. Now you can go to like 12 now.
Very nice.
That's cool, because I always thought the managed backups was one of the coolest features. You know, doing the managed backups to Azure was one of the coolest features of SQL Server, and then now extending that to even some of these really large databases really opens it up.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Nice. That's great. Cool. Thanks so much, Bob. This is really a wealth of information for our listeners, so
I appreciate you having me on. It's good stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and, thank you very much, Bob.
You bet.
Good talking to you guys.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.